You are listening to the 1440 podcast. 1440 is the youth ministry of Eagle Mountain Church in Fort Worth, Texas. For more information and for more resources, visit 1440.com.
How's everyone doing? Good. All right. How many of y'all were here last week? All right. So I think we did this last week and y'all kind of weren't too sure. What did we talk about the first week of the series? Alone in, what did we talk about last week? Alone in, come on, y'all, holler out. There we go. Okay, so tonight, I'm really excited about tonight. Not that I wasn't excited about the night before that. I'm really excited about tonight because I'm totally stealing like three different messages all at one time, which if you call it a ministry, you're finding yourself speaking to people is awesome because it makes prepping and studying just so much easier. It's way more enjoyable when it's stuff that you've listened to, and it's great. It's perfect. So anyways, I was really excited. I'm totally using at least three or four different messages from different preachers, and it's awesome. But again, like I said from the very beginning, like we set up when we told you, and we were completely honest, this whole entire series is very personal for us. It's very personal. In the fact that these are all elements that, for myself, I had to use in my own life. And I came across these moments in my life, and so it's important to us that we share them with you because I want you to be able to experience the same freedom that we did. So anyways, I was prepping the other day, and I was, well, another rule of thumb for any of you future preachers out there, one of the things that you learn early on when you're trying to speak to people, especially teenagers who tend to get bored real quick, and they just give you this stare, and you're trying to get them to wake up a little bit, is you try and relate it. You try and find something relatable when you're talking, right? Okay, so if you're not interested, don't listen. But for all you future preachers, just write that down. Full side note. So I was thinking, okay, what are some things that happened in my life that I can relate with you all about? And I was definitely, this really has no spiritual meaning, but I was thinking about being alone. And a few years back, I guess about, 5 years now, 5 years ago, I was just out of high school. I was about a year out of high school, going to college, still living with mom and dad. And there was a place right down the street over in Southlake. For any of y'all that don't know, we're going to have what I call a little personal moment, and that y'all are about to get to know me a whole lot better. I tell the sixth graders all the time, I'll tell them certain things like, we're about to go to a deeper place in our relationship right here. So deeper place in our relationship as a group, you now know that Pastor Blake really enjoys Italian food, like really enjoys it. Like I go in, it's not like I come out of a restaurant, hey, that was good. Like I like grade the Italian food restaurants. It's really serious. But anyways, there's this kind of not quite hole-in-the-wall place, but it's right on the cusp being a hole-in-the-wall place as you're going to Southlake. And I like going there because it's owned by like a family of New Yorkers, and they talk like New Yorkers, they cook like New Yorkers, and they're giant New York Yankee fans, right? About 5 years ago, the Rangers were in the playoffs, finally. So everyone was excited, I was really excited. And so I decided I'm going to go, we were playing the Yankees. I'm like, I'm going to go to this restaurant, I really want some Italian food. Family's out of town, so I jump in the car, and I'm not going to go there and not wear some Rangers gear, right? So I took it to, like, the nth degree. I had, like, red shoes on, giant Rangers shirt with the Rangers uniform on, the Rangers ball cap, and I walk in, like, hey, what are you doing? You know, they're trying to, like, throw me out and tease me, and they're all wearing their Yankee gear and grease up to here and everything. It's great. It's awesome. The food is fantastic. And I was kind of laughing because in that moment, you feel so alone, but I loved it. It's like I'm on my own little fan island here because they got Yankee fans cooking, and then like their whole family just comes in that night, right? And they're all eating Italian food, and everyone's wearing Yankee gear, and I stick out like a sore thumb. It was fantastic. I think at one point they even threatened to like spit my food and not give me meatballs, something like that. So, anyways, I was thinking about that. It was kind of a flashback moment, but the food's still good. It was awesome, but they didn't let me come back while they were playing us. So anyways, today's topic is alone in your faith. Okay. Well, one of the premises of talking about something, you actually got to know what you're talking about. So we're going to, real quick, how do we define faith? Anybody know how we define faith? What's the scripture first that defines faith? Just yell it out. Hebrews 11, 1. Come on, guys. What scripture verse? Hebrews 11, 1. Okay. Now faith is the substance of things hope for, evidence of things. Okay, so what's faith? Something you're hoping for, and you don't necessarily see the result. So for the sake of today's conversation, we can either be discussing, I'm a Christian, I'm not seeing the results, I feel like I'm alone in my actual faith, just as a Christian. I'm believing for something. I'm having faith for something. I don't see the results. I feel alone in this. I'm trying to adjust my behavior according to the word of God, but I'm alone in that, even within my own family. I feel isolated on an island, okay? Make sense? Come on, talk to me, guys. We're gonna work this a little bit. Y'all gotta talk back to me a little bit. All right, so I want you all to start. We're gonna go to Joshua chapter 10. Now, this is another reason why I'm really excited about tonight, because I gotta talk about one of my five favorite guys in the Bible, right? Okay, obviously the first one's Jesus. I'd be remiss to not put that on the list. Number two, I like David. Number two, Elijah. I really enjoy Elijah. Number four is Enoch. I feel like anybody that earns the right to just get swept up to heaven, you're doing something right. And number five is Joshua. So I'm really excited. We talk about Joshua tonight. Joshua chapter 10. How many of y'all are there? Oh, come on, guys. How many of y'all are there? Hey, can we turn the lights up a little bit, the house lights, guys? I can't really see anybody. A little bit more. We can turn as many lights on as we need to. Joshua chapter 10, verse 5. All right, so this is going to be a little worried. Therefore, the five kings of the Amorites, the king of Jerusalem, the king of Hebron, the king of Jarmuth, the king of Lachish, don't worry, I actually looked up how to pronounce these names earlier, it's awesome, and the king of Eglon, gathered together and went up, they and all their armies, and camped before Gibeon, and made war against it. And the men of Gibeon sent to Joshua at the camp of Gilgal, saying, "Do not forsake your servants. Come up to us quickly, save us, and help us. For all the kings of the Amorites who dwell in the mountains have gathered against us." So Joshua ascended from Gilgal, he and all the people of war with him, and all the mighty men of valor. And the Lord said to Joshua, "Do not fear them, for I have delivered them into your hand. Not a man of them shall stand before you." Joshua, therefore, came upon them suddenly, having marched all night from Gilgal. So the Lord routed them before Israel, killed them with a great slaughter at Gibeon, chased them along the road that goes to Beth Horon, and struck them down as far as Ezekiah and Mekedah. I didn't look that one up. I should look that one up. And it happened as they fled before Israel and were on the descent of Beth Horon, that thing, that the Lord cast down large hailstones from heaven on them as far as Ezekiah, and they died. This is really just really kumbaya stuff, right? There were more who died from the hailstones than the children of Israel killed with the sword. Then Joshua spoke to the Lord in the day when the Lord delivered up the Amorites before the children of Israel. And he said in the sight of Israel, "Sun, stand still over Gibeon, and moon in the valley of Ajalon. So the sun stood still and the moon stopped till the people had revenge upon their enemies. First off, in the midst of all the movies that they do about the Bible, if they ever actually did one that came anywhere close to how they describe stuff in the Old Testament, that would give some of these other rated R movies a run for the money. That was gory. Anybody agree? That was not pleasant. There was a whole lot of death. Joshua sending down the people of war. We got five. This is the real battle of the five armies going on. We got five kings going on over here, okay? But in the midst of all this war and Old Testament stuff and the language and not being able to pronounce the names, this event happens. Now, how many of y'all have actually heard of the event that just happened? Raise your hand. Okay, so not y'all are like, what's going on? Okay, so Joshua actually prayed before the Lord and the sun stopped. And the moon stopped. Which means that what stopped? Time. This the day of Back to the Future. Anybody else know what I'm talking about? All right, cool. I'm just making sure y'all were raised right. It's okay, cool. All right. So what we have here is Joshua is in the middle of war. Kind of picture this a little bit. There's people dying. They're getting their revenge. And then in the middle of all this, God decides to help them send in a hailstorm. Apparently that's not enough. Joshua decides, I'm finishing this today. We're not fighting one more day. I need to finish this today. But in the old times, whenever it was dark and there was no more light out and the moon came up, they stopped fighting usually. The reason was because it's kind of hard to fight someone with a sword when you can't see anything that's going on and it's not pleasant. So they usually cease. Joshua's like, nuh-uh, we're not having this. We're already winning as it is, but I need more time. So he actually has the audacity to stop fighting, turn around, lift his head up to the heavens, be like, I need the sun and the moon to stop. And it happened. and it happened. And it records that there was never a day like that, and there never has been since. The dude prayed, and the sun and the moon stopped. Now, I know some of y'all are some serious prayers, and Miss Lord really works with you. Have any of you gotten the sun or the moon to actually stop? Have any of you actually thought to even pray that way? Hey, I got an idea. I need to get my homework done today. Can we have the sun and the moon stop? That would be fantastic. Right? Okay, so nobody here has had that event happen. But here we have Joshua. He's this older man. Remember, this isn't a spring chicken. An older guy. Yeah, I said spring chicken. An older guy. And he's gotten to this place in his life, in his faith, in what he believes, where he has, and you'll see it here in a little bit in the video clip I'm going to show you, one of the guys that I lean on for this type of teaching. He had the audacity to look before God and with faith, while no one else is probably praying this prayer, I need the sun and the moon to stop. Now, I like to consider myself a Christian disciple of God. I'm not there yet. I can't say that if I had to, I could pray the sun and the moon to stop in my life. But Joshua is at that place. Well, how do we get to that place? And how, what does that do with being alone in your faith? Oh, I'm so glad you asked. We'll get there. Okay. So I kind of cheated. I went to the end. We started at the end. Now we're going to go back. Go to Numbers chapter 14. Now keep in mind, don't ever forget, this is the guy that got the sun and the moon to stop in the middle of a giant bloody war. All right, Numbers 14, verse 6. But Joshua, the son of Nun, and Caleb, Nun, I feel like that's a funny name. I won't be naming any of my kids that. This is my son, Nun. And Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, who were among those who had spied out the land, tore their clothes, and they spoke to all the congregation of the children of Israel, saying, "The land we pass through to spy out is an exceedingly good land. If the Lord delights in us, then he will bring us into this land and give it to us. A land which flows with milk and honey." Y'all ever heard of that? Land that flows with milk and honey? Okay, so, all right. Only, somebody say VeggieTales? Yeah, that's right. That's another sign you were raised well. All right. "Only do not rebel against the Lord, nor fear the people of the land, for they are our bread. Their protection has departed from them, and the Lord is with us. Do not fear." Now remember, this is Joshua that just said that. "And all the congregation said to stone them with stones. Now the glory of the Lord appeared in the tabernacle in a meeting before all the children of Israel." Okay. So now we're talking about being alone in your faith. Here's Joshua and Caleb. But specifically, we're talking about Joshua, but we like Caleb too. So don't forget about Caleb. Joshua and Caleb, at this point, they're working with Moses, and Moses sends them out with several other men, I believe it was like another dozen men, to go spy out Jericho, right? This is a portion of the land that they were promised. Go give us a report. A lot of y'all heard this. They come back and like, "Listen, we can take them. We're going to win this battle. The Lord promises to us. Their protection's down. We can win." Well, the other guys show up and be like, "They're giants. We're grasshoppers in their sight. They're going to crush us. We're not going to make it." Joshua's over here like, no. He promised this land to us, right? And he's in front of all of Israel. He's in front of his family. He's in front of the entire generation that just got liberated from slavery in Egypt. And he's up here next to Moses, just declaring the Lord's promise. And what do they do in turn? They don't even try and argue with them. Their immediate response is, "Hey, I got an idea. Let's stone you. And Moses too." Yeah, both of you guys, we're stoning both of you. Talk about feeling alone, okay? We're talking the people that you just traveled across the desert with, the people you just walked across the Red Sea with, you were just liberated from Egypt with, you saw the Ten Commandments come down. These are your family, these are your friends, these are people you grew up with. Here you are, knowing what the Lord promised. You go out, you see it with your own eyes, you come before them, "Guys, I got great news, we can do this." And they're like, "Are you joking? We're going to kill you." Now, I know there's all been moments where we felt alone in our lives. I highly doubt you ever came home and mom and dad were like, "I can't believe you failed that test. Get the stones. We're grabbing the stones. We can make another one. Grab the stones." Right? Okay? Y'all get what I'm saying? I'm just saying, chances are, nobody's trying to stone you. But here's Joshua and all the people he loved. And he's next to the man of God, and they're like, we're going to kill you for saying something that you believe is true. In fact, we're going to kill you for the very thing that we all grew up together believing. But how dare you get up and tell us what you believe and what we're supposed to believe? We have no time for this. We're going to kill you. Feeling a little alone in that moment. Feeling a little bit isolated. Now, the Lord intervened, and that didn't happen. But imagine going on from that day. Imagine having to wake up the next day and come across those friends, those family members, those other leaders, having to look them in the eye day after day, knowing that these are the very people that wanted to stone you. Now, we've all caught glares from people down the hallway at school, but chances are we weren't concerned whether or not they were going to try and jump us and finish us right then and there. Right? But that's what Joshua had to live with. That's what Joshua found himself in. Numbers 26:65. For the Lord said to them, y'all don't have to turn here. For the Lord said to them, they shall surely die in the wilderness. So there was not left a man of them, except for who? Caleb and Joshua. As if you're not feeling lonely enough, Joshua, and knowing everyone wants to kill you, you get to live and watch everyone you love die. Because they refuse to believe what you know to be true. You get to stand by knowing that the very promise and the very faith that you tried your utmost to share with them, they rejected you. Now you have to stand by and watch them pay the price. Talk about feeling isolated. Talk about feeling like you're stuck on an island in the midst of millions of people. Chances are, I know for me, I haven't been quite to that extent. Praise God. But that's where Joshua found the same guy that prayed for the sun to stand still and for the moon to stop. This was his life for 40 years. Deuteronomy 31:7. Y'all go ahead and turn there. Then Moses called Joshua and said to him in the sight of all Israel, be strong and of good courage. For you must go with this people to the land which the Lord has sworn to their fathers to give them, and you shall cause them to inherit it. And the Lord, he is the one who goes before you. He will be with you. He will not leave you nor forsake you. Do not fear nor be dismayed. Okay, so here's Joshua, right? We know what he believes. He believes that this land is theirs. People reject him. They've already tried to stone him, and now he's just spent the last 40 years watching all those people die because of their disobedience, because of their lack of faith. And just when in Joshua's mind, I know he had to know this was coming, but then you have to embrace the reality that we're fine to this point, and as if he hasn't experienced being alone enough in areas of his life, Moses turns to him and says, congratulations, you get to lead him. My time's done. I'm out. The one guy that you've looked up to and had your back all these years, I'm gone, and now these millions of people are depending on you to lead them. I would dare say there is nothing more isolating than leadership. Because at least when you're not leading and you feel alone because nobody's looking at you. When you're leading, it's because everyone's looking at you. This is Joshua's life. Yay, Joshua. It's like he got out of Egypt after being a slave, and things actually got harder. Can you imagine sitting down with this guy and asking him, hey, Joshua, can you tell me your life story? Sure, you got a couple days? We're not even talking about the endless battles and wars and everything else this guy went through. Here I am into my 80s, what most people consider the latter part of my years, and now I've been handed leadership over all these people, and I know what their parents tried to do to me.
But this is the same guy who had the audacity to tell the sun and the moon to stop. How do you hold your faith? How did he not lose sight of what God had promised him? Joshua at any moment could have looked at Moses and said, I'm done. I'm done being your assistant. I've been by your side since Exodus. He wouldn't have said that. They wouldn't have written it. But it's true. Exodus is one of, I think it's like chapter 17, was the first mention we make of Joshua actually being with Moses. Joshua was the one that went with Moses up to Mount Sinai when he got the Ten Commandments. How awesome would that be? You know, we watched the old movie Ten Commandments where he's come down the Ten Commandments. Imagine being Joshua and being there. Being the first guy that Moses looks like. Hey, check these out. Yeah, God just wrote these. You're like, what? Whoa, are you serious? Check them. This guy's got an awesome life story. But that guy, that one guy he looked up to is now gone also. So how did he do it? How did Joshua do it? Because somewhere along the lines, we're missing it because in my own eyes, my day-to-day life, my job, my family, my school, it's too much for me. I can't take this anymore. I don't want to believe what I believe. I'm going to come to church if I have to and do what I must. But I'm done with this. I'm not dressing up like a Christian. I don't need to be talking to people about Jesus. It's weird. It isolates me. It makes me feel lonely. I'm done. And yet Joshua would look at you and go, are you serious? Are you serious? Really? You don't get to wear the clothes you want to wear, so you're going to throw this all away? You're joking, right? You have any idea what I wore in Egypt? It wasn't pretty. You ever walked the desert till your feet bled and your shoes fell apart? You ever felt that heat? Nope, didn't think so. So where's the gap? Where are we getting this idea that it's too hard, I'm lonely, I feel. And then you got Joshua over here going, let's go, come on. There's three things, there's three attributes that I believe are important to look at with Joshua. Do you want to know what they are? Do you want to know what they are? Yeah. Okay. Number one, and I'm going to give you a chapter reference so you can actually go back and look at what I'm telling you. Joshua kept his eyes fixed on what God promised. Numbers chapter 14. Number two, and I cannot emphasize this enough, Joshua had Moses. He stayed close to and valued the counsel of a godly man who was where he ultimately was going to be in life. And number three, he simply did what God said do. Joshua chapter 1. And for number two, it was Exodus 24:13. He kept his eyes on the promise, he stuck to a godly man, and he did what God said to do. Now, there's a whole lot we could look at Joshua and break it all down and give you a whole laundry list. But if you're asking me, what are three things, Pastor Blake, that you take from Joshua and you work at to implement in your own life? It's those three things. Number two is not to say more important, but it's something that especially right out in high school and right out of high school, I endeavored to the point that it wasn't comfortable. Nothing like having to look at your friend and be like, I'm not hanging out with you tonight. I got to go meet with Pastor so-and-so. Something wrong? Nope. Just need to go meet with him. Well, okay. Something clear is wrong with you. You need to go get counseling. Really? No. That individual is where I want to be one day. And as much as I love and appreciate your friendship, going to the movies with you tonight is going to do squat for me tomorrow. And Joshua dared to look at an entire group of people and everyone he loved and everyone he knew. I love you guys. We've been through a lot together. But I've learned to pay attention to what Moses says and what God says to Moses. And I love you all, but I'm doing what he said because one day I'm going to be where that man is. Now, there's those of you in the room, you may have no interest, I don't want to be a leader, I don't want to do this, fine. From this point on, check out. That's cool. For those of you that are actually interested in doing something with your life, doing something more than what you actually imagine, doing what Romans, what did we talk about last week? I think it was Romans chapter 8, talked about that he predestined from the beginning for you. If you want to tap into some predestined, God-ordained lifestyle, pay attention. If not, you can check out. You have my full permission. Just sit there and be quiet. I'm talking to people who potentially want to change the world. I'm talking to individuals who are interested in seeing Jesus coming back. And I'm talking about people that are interested in taking what Joshua learned and going even further with it. Do I have any of those people in this room? Seriously. Then pay attention. Because we've gotten into this mindset of woe is me. I don't like being alone. And up until now, the last 2 weeks, we've talked about how to get off your island. Tonight, I'm not talking to you about getting off the island of feeling alone in what you believe or what your faith is or what you're believing for. And I'm also not telling you that to be a Christian or to be a disciple of Jesus is to be alone. That's not what I'm telling you. What I am telling you is I dare you just for a second to look past the emotion of feeling alone and actually look at where you're standing. Because even though it may feel like a pile of sand right now, if you dare to turn around and get to work, you might just be standing in the place that he has promised for you. God did not call Abraham to be alone. He called Abraham to be the first to take that land and promised him many more to follow. Being a Christian, being a disciple of Christ, is not to choose to be alone or to be alone in your relationships or just to feel weird. And I don't like this. It is, you are choosing. You are choosing that you believe that there is something more. And yet, all too often, we decide we're standing on this island, and when we're standing on this island and we could be dressed up for where he's taking us. We could be looking around and recognizing that there's a God-ordained resort. There's a lifestyle that he wants us to live here on this island with other men and women who are capable of helping us. We realize we're staring at an ocean again, and I need to get off. I don't like this. You know, I don't like the fact that the Bible doesn't like homosexuality. So I'm cool with love wins, and I'll coin it with the Bible, but I'm not actually going to stand for something. We got an entire generation that has no backbone. And unfortunately, it's mine. And we got the former generation, specifically in the church, looking at us going, what are y'all doing? Check out Joshua. Really? You think if somebody looked at Joshua and be like, it's cool, Joshua. It's cool. Love still wins. We're gonna stay in this little lifestyle sin. That's cute. You want to go to this land? Joshua would be like, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me, guys? There's so much more. I'm not saying that we need to get to a place where the sun literally stands still. But what if we got to a place where we look at the Lord, I want more time. I want God-ordained time. I want you to show me how to make the sun and the moon stand still when everything feels like it's going way too fast in my life right now. Show me how to slow down and win some battles within myself. There's a video I'm going to show you guys real quick if y'all can get ready. This is the guy. This is one of my favorite guys to listen to. I love this video and it fits right in with what we're talking about. So you guys go ahead and kill the lights. Play that video real quick.
So let me ask you a question. Have you ever been dressed to the nines for an event, like a wedding or maybe an important reception, and along the way you had to stop at a gas station and get out and pump gas, and when you do, you realize I am completely overdressed for the gas station. I mean, here I am in a suit and a tie, and I'm pumping gas, and you almost feel like you look so silly and out of place that you have to explain to everybody around you, whether they ask or not, hey, I'm headed to a wedding. That's why I'm dressed like this. Don't worry, it's all good. And the thing is, I feel like in my life, as God has spoken to my heart and placed visions inside of me, sometimes I find myself overdressed for the place where I am on my way to where God is taking me. Okay, so the best example I can give you from my ministry of a time when I felt like I was completely out of place in context of the vision that God had given me in comparison to the place where I was. Our church was about 2 months old, and we had a huge Easter event. We actually rented helicopters and dropped thousands of plastic Easter eggs out of the helicopters onto a football field and then gave away prizes. There were different tickets in the eggs, and we gave away flat screen TVs and Wii's and Xboxes. It was amazing. None of the parents ended up going to jail for beating up another parent to get their kid the flat screen TV. And so the next morning on Easter Sunday, I stood up in front of our church of about 200 people, and I said, wasn't it amazing to have 2,000 people at our Easter event yesterday? And they all cheered, wow, it was amazing. And so then I was like, what are we gonna do starting next Easter when we have 2,000 people every single Sunday? Crickets. Nobody cheered. Nobody said amen. Nobody backed me up. I'm just standing there on the stage, casting this vision for 2,000 people coming to our church. And it was one of the most awkward moments of my pastoral career. I felt completely out of place, like I'm dressed in a suit at a gas station telling our church we're gonna have 2,000 people when the 200 people who are sitting there are kind of like, yeah, you know, sounds good. And I wanna prepare you. You're gonna feel like that a lot of times when you're praying for the sun to stand still. Everybody around you isn't always going to understand what God has put inside of you. That's okay. In order to see the sun stand still, in order to walk in audacious faith, to dare to believe God for the impossible, you've got to be willing to look ridiculous from time to time. But when you get to where God is taking you, they won't be laughing at you anymore. Like, I want you to identify in your life one area where God may be calling you to look ridiculous in audacious faith. An area where God is calling you to do the exact opposite of what everybody else is doing. And in your mind, you've known for some time, God is calling me to this. God is stretching me in this area. But every time you go to make that move, you start looking around the gas station, worrying about what all the other people at the gas station are gonna think. And the point is, you're not dressing for the gas station. You're dressing for the wedding. We've got to learn to dress for the place that God has prepared for us, not the place where He's preparing us for that place. In other words, we've got to learn in the process between what I call the payoff and God's promise to embrace those small beginnings and not be afraid to step out on faith and to speak God's word and to structure our lives, not for where we are, but for where we're going. Let me ask you a question. Is there something God's calling you to do to activate your faith? Is there a prayer He's calling you to pray and a corresponding motion that He's calling you to make in advancing toward the answer to that prayer that is gonna make you look ridiculous to the people around you? Where's an area in your life where God has told you to do something or believe something or prepare for something, but you've dressed down and backed down because of the people around? And what will you do in the next few days to really start to dress up again, to prepare? Are there relationships that you need to adjust? Are you speaking in line with where God is taking you, or have you settled into comfortable doubt? What's it gonna look like for you to dress for the wedding, not the gas station? Because I promise you this, when you see the sun stand still, when you experience God doing the impossible, when you get to the wedding, the place God has prepared for you, you'll be awfully glad that you didn't take your cues from the people at the gas station. You'll be glad that you dressed your life for the place you were going, not the place where you are.
One, two, there we go. Did y'all like that?
Yeah.
I really enjoy, his name's Pastor Stephen Furtick from Elevation, and I really enjoy some of his stuff. But I felt like that video was a good added piece to what we were talking about tonight. So I want to pick up kind of where we left off and where Pastor Stephen was talking about there. Go to Joshua chapter 1. Because I wouldn't get this fired up in front of you, and I wouldn't get kind of this intense about a subject matter like this without, and then just leave you hanging. Like don't do this, bye. I'm like, I'm not going to do that to you, all right? But I showed you some attributes from Joshua that I feel like are very important. But it's very important for you guys to understand one thing, and I said it right before we play this movie. I am not telling you that when it comes to what you believe or what you're believing for in life, that you have to be alone. Or that to choose to do that is to be alone. Here's the proof of that. Joshua chapter 1. Now, this is the scenario. Moses has just passed away. So we're all the way back up to where he's gone through a situation where people wanted to stone him and Moses kind of isolated him, and now Moses is gone, so now it's all on Joshua, right? So we're in this place where Joshua is this leader, but we're still stuck on this kind of island of what I believe and what I'm supposed to do. Nobody else is called to lead the people of Israel like Joshua is. He's by himself, right? Wrong. In chapter 1, starting verse 1, after the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord, it came to pass that the Lord spoke to Joshua, the son of Nun. Still funny. Moses' assistant saying, Moses, my servant, is dead. I think Pastor John talked about this intensive. Like the shortest going home ceremony ever, right? Moses, my servant, is dead. Now, therefore, arise, go over this Jordan, you and all this people, to the land which I am giving to them, the children of Israel. Every place that the sole of your foot. Now, stop for a minute before we read this. I've read this so many times. The Lord got a hold of me a few years back and had me read it like this. I want you to read this as if he's talking to you, either in the thing you're believing for or whether you're actually struggling and feeling alone in what you believe. Every place that the sole of your foot will tread, I have given you, as I said to Moses. From the wilderness and this Lebanon, as far as the great river and the river Euphrates, all the land of the Hittites, and to the great sea toward the going down of the sun shall be your territory. Basically, everything that you've heard about being promised from generations to generations, generations up to this point, your feet will actually touch what I promised you. No man shall be able to stand before you all the days of your life. And as I was with Moses, so I will be with you. Again, that's why it's so important to have a Moses in your life. Because even the Lord was like, listen, remember what you watched with Moses. The same way I was with him, I'll be with you. So I will be with you. I will not leave you nor forsake you. Does that sound like a man who is alone? No. Be strong and of good courage. For to this people you shall divide as an inheritance the land which I swore to their fathers to give them. Only be strong and very courageous that you may observe to do according to all the law which Moses, my servant, commanded you. Do not turn from it to the right hand or to the right hand or to the left, that you may prosper wherever you go. Now, I want you to picture yourself a year from now, 2 years from now, 3 years from now, 4 years from now. Some of you will be into adulthood by that point. And you may be looking for to step out as an adult and what you want to do. You may find yourself in college, finishing a degree and not quite sure what to do with that degree that you've got, or wanting to step over into a career line and not quite sure what to do, but there's a struggle and how does my faith mix with that? And you actually take a second, and within you, the Lord says, do not fear. Every place that your foot touches, I will be with you, and I will give you exactly what I promised you. That type of dialogue between you and God only takes place for an individual who's willing to stay in his word and not be comfortable with being alone, but be okay with, even if there's moments in my life where it's just me and Jesus, that's still enough for me. That's where it's hard. And that's where a lot of people decide, I'm out. I can't do it. It doesn't feel good. I don't like this. This season of my life isn't fun. God is doing this to me. But for the individuals that take a second, like, you know what? He did it all. He paid the price for everything. And I believe that. So you know what? If right now, if it's just me and Jesus,
that's enough. And if I gotta go find a Moses, if I gotta go find an 80-year-old man or an 80-year-old woman who's been where I wanna be in life, and that's the only friend I've got, then they're my mentor, you're my God, let's go do what I want, what you called me to do. Rather than playing around with our lives and hoping we do what we're supposed to do and hoping we're believing what we're supposed to believe in. And again, it begins with one thing, and that is none of this is possible if you don't ever look at this. It's hard to have a conversation with somebody who you don't know what they sound like or what they look like. But that was enough for Joshua, guys. The same guy that was a slave, then wasn't a slave, then saw the works of the Lord, then wanted to be stoned, then watched all his loved ones die off, and then was finally in the land, and now I'm in charge of everything. It's like to a lot of people looking out from the outside looking in, it's like this guy can't catch a break. It's not like he's getting paid for all this. You know, it's not like, hey, we're gonna put you on salary, Joshua, go lead everybody. You know? This is what he believed he was called to do. But instead of throwing a pity party, y'all ever have those in your house, a pity party? A little, your mom would be like, really? You want a pity party, right? And my mom would do that all the time. Like, you know, like, what's going on? Really? You want to throw a pity party? When you stop and just, is life just that rough for you? And then, you know, the little siblings would chime in, yeah, you want a pity party? It's so rough. And you got a seven-year-old telling you how rough life is. Like, shut up, that's not funny. It's serious, right? This is very serious business. You have no idea what happened to calculus today. It's rough. Life's hard, okay? You come talk to me when you're in high school. Have that conversation with my siblings. Now they're in high school and they're like, well, I don't know what the big deal was. It was tough, right? It's funny when you think about it when you're not in the middle of it all. When you're in high school, when you're in middle school and that takes up so much, you feel the pressure of it. And you're around a bunch of other people that may or may not believe what you believe. And even, chances are, even if you're around people who are so-called Christians or believe God, chances are if you were to stand in front of them like, I believe one day I'm going to find a cure for cancer. That's cute. That's super cute. A lot of people have said that. Yeah, sure. Go make your money. Have fun. Like, no, really. I have a hunger for this. I have a desire for this. I love doing it. And I believe that if I apply the word of God and I pour everything into it, I can aid in helping find a cure for this. No. That's cute. Keep trying. Yeah, you go. You do that. And then over years and over time, you're like, well, maybe not. Maybe I just want to, you know, clean animals for a living. I don't know. What a way, you know. Meanwhile, you got the person who wants to be the veterinarian getting all discouraged because they believe that they can put together a shelter for animals and really help. And somebody's like, that's ridiculous. You want to be a vet? That's disgusting. That's gross. You don't want to do that? No, you don't understand. I believe the Lord wants me to help in this area, and I believe I can minister. That's stupid. Go do something else with your life where you can make some real money. Congratulations, you will have made a lifestyle of maybe making money if you're lucky, and you're still going to feel alone on the island. Or you can lean on the guy that paid for you to have everlasting life. You could totally, I don't know, definitely bring in the assistance of God Almighty. Because apparently for Joshua that was enough. But unfortunately for our generation, that tends to not be the case. Like, no, that's cute. I'll do it if it's convenient to a point. What was Pastor Stephen talking about? Being dressed for the wedding, being dressed for the place that you're going in life rather than where you are. But for us, that's uncomfortable. So we'll show up at the gas station in our life wearing the cargo shorts and the t-shirt. I'm going to a wedding. I'm going to a wedding. You're like, you're sitting in the back. And then you get there and nobody lets you know. Why not? You're not dressed right. You're in no way prepared to enter this wedding. And somehow we think that we can do that with our faith. We think that I don't need to study this out. I know what Jesus did. I know who he is. This really high school really isn't the most convenient place for this. I'll worry about this once we get out. I'm a college, I'm an adult. I can do what I really want. And the Lord will be happy because I'll be able to really, really love him and really spread talk to people about him. And then you get to college and you find out, wait a second, it's just as hard. This isn't what I thought. Well, you're not dressed up enough to be able to handle that in college. Why? Because you quit back in high school. You need to put your faith down and pick it back up. I could give you a list of people that I've encountered in just my almost 25 years who, if I sat down and asked for their life story, would look me straight in the eye and say, my daddy was a preacher. I was raised in a church. I went to church as a kid. I wanted to be a youth pastor. What happened? Life. No, you put it down. You walked away. The world offered you a lifeboat for an island you weren't supposed to get off of, and you took it. But right here, right now, we have the opportunity to choose otherwise. And be like, whether it's easy, whether this believing God thing is easy right now, or whether it's not, if it's just me and Jesus, because if it was the other way around, if it was just you, he still would have hung on the cross for you. But so few of us are willing to do the same. And yet if we would, guys, if we would, you can see the sun stand still in your life. You find yourself in a place where suddenly believing for the Lord to do something beyond what everyone else thinks is possible. Simply because you stayed in his word and you know what he said. I don't know about you. I can't answer this question for you. But that's good enough for me. The possibility of seeing God move on that level is good enough for me to actually take a stand. Because I've seen so many people who didn't, and they're hurting. And they're far more alone now than they ever were before. Because the world wound up not being what they thought it would be. Because the promises of today wound up being the pain of tomorrow. And they wound up marrying the wrong person, or giving up on their dream, giving up on what God said because they've convinced themselves that God just wants to hurt them and is up there with a big fly swatter just squashing all their dreams. I've had people say that to me. It's funny. It's funny, but it's sad at the same time. Guys, the day, my first day here, I was talking with a former coworker. He was a former boss, actually. And he said, he looked at me, he's like, man, that's awesome. I wanted to be a youth minister when I was a kid. And when I say rough as nails, dirty, rusty nails, he's pretty rough. Not exactly the first thing come to my mind when I talk to this guy, hey, you should be a minister. I'd be like, no, I feel like you're kind of what you should be doing in life. And with all sincerity, he's looking at me being like, I really want to do that. What happened? I got divorced. It didn't work out for me. God just did other stuff for me. I was like, no. He wants good for you. Guys, he wants good for you. He wanted good for Joshua, and Joshua was bold enough to believe it and act on it. He lived out the extent of his days. He outlived a generation by decades. He saw God move, and had it not been for Joshua. Imagine somebody said that about you when your time was done. Had it not been for Madison, I would not be here. Had not been for Asher, things would have been different. It seems small now, but you have not had your spirit shooken up until an individual has come up to you, looked you straight in the face and said, had your daddy not intervened, I would be a dead man and my family would be broken. Had that happened to me. Whole new perspective for my dad. When you have a grown man walk up to you and say, I want to shake your hand because you are Jim's son. It meant something to that man. the audacity to pray and to intervene and be in the right place. That's right timing. And that is an outstanding way to live. And it's way too quiet in here. I know it's late, guys. I know it's late. And I know we're in the middle of school and this is kind of heavy stuff. But listen, for those of you that I was talking to and you want to be leaders and world changers and help the people around you, whether it's in your own community or globally, watch Joshua. He went from a slave to a liberator. Why do you think some of the greatest testimonies are people that struggle with stuff in their life? I was listening to one guy one time, and he was ministering, and he was talking about a guy who had a testimony coming off drugs, and he's like, you know, it's kind of frustrating because you want to have a cool testimony. You know, some of us are standing there going, man, I don't have a cold anymore. And the guy next to you is like, I got freed from 12 years on crack. You're like, well, that's way cooler testimony than mine. And then you watch that guy turn around, and 3 years later, he's got a church of 5,000, and people are listening to him, and you're bagging groceries. Like, well, the Lord just did more for him. No. He went from being a slave to a liberator. He just did way more with less. You guys are here in the revival capital of the world. You have a youth pastor who would give anything for you, loves you dearly, and wants nothing more than for you to do everything that the Lord has set before you and is willing to do anything to help you do that. You will already have far more than Joshua ever had to begin with. You already have a Moses that stands at this pulpit every Wednesday and is pouring into your life. And we have a responsibility to be like Joshua. And even if it means feeling alone with the people that are around us, if it's just me and Moses and God, that's good enough for me. This is one island I have no intention of leaving, because this island is where he's going to build what he has for me. Y'all go ahead and stand up. What time we got? 8:34? Round dot. And so tonight, again, I'm going to ask you, let's be very picky. If this doesn't concern you, if you've zoned out, I get it. I knew what I was getting into before tonight. But if you're here tonight and you feel this island, you're feeling the pressure of it, and you are heavily considering either walking away from what you believe entirely or laying down something you are believing for the sake of not feeling isolated and not feeling alone, then this is for you. And I would ask you to come up here right now. Band, y'all can come up here. Again, very picky altar call. Very picky. And that's okay. Because it only took one man to get into the promised land. It only took one that was willing to do simply what God asked him to do. Just one. And if it's just one to get where you need to be in life, where the Lord wants you in life, the people that he's going to put around you to help them, to get your church where he wants to get your church to be, even if it's just one, that's all he needs. He's proven it time and time and time again. And I, for one, intend to be one of those people. Pick me. Pick me, pick me, pick me. You guys can go ahead and start playing. So again, we're going to keep this kind of short and sweet, and I want to be very clear on what we're doing. All we're doing right now is we're recognizing that from this point on,
If it's just you, Jesus, that's enough. And if you need a Moses in your life, you have a youth group for that. And you have youth pastors and youth ministers for you to help you with that. Because we believe that if you are in here tonight, you are called to do even more in life than what Joshua was able to do. And we fully recognize that at moments, that's not the easiest thing to admit. But if you can do it, I say this a lot when we're talking about anything. If I can do it in this situation, if you can believe in this situation, then when this passes and suddenly it's all roses and everything's fun for that season of life, it's awesome. Because you've seen his faithfulness already. And so just real quick, this is what we're going to do. I'm just going to pray over you guys. For those of you who didn't come up, this still rings true to you. I'm here to let you know. If you need a Moses in your life, that's what your youth group is for. That's what your pastors are for. But those three things that I listed, and I hope you took notes. Those three things, I challenge you. You do those three things and you will see a turnaround in your behavior, in your emotions. And he is not one that he should lie. He will prove himself faithful to you. So real quick, Heavenly Father, Lord, I thank you.
Thank you for listening to the 1440 podcast. If the Lord has ministered to you in a big way through this time, we want to hear about it. You can email us at testify@1440online.com.